Hollywood sent us two types of escapist movies this summer, superhero blow-em-ups and a slew of romantic comedies. In The Atlantic, Chloe Angel wrote that the lessons of the former are pretty straightforward. It's fun to blow stuff up, while the messages of the latter are more subtle.
I miss sex.
I miss sex, too.
Right, I mean, sometimes you just need it.
Why does it always gotta come with complications?
And emotion.
It's a physical act, like playing tennis.
Do you want more beer?
Yeah. Let's play tennis.
What can we learn from rom-coms? What are the lessons of these films? 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation and find a link to Chloe Angel's piece at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. And Chloe Angel joins us by Skype from Sydney in Australia. She's an editor for Feministing.com. Nice to have you with us today, and thanks for getting up so early.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that little scene's from Friends with Benefits. What do we read into that exchange between Justin Timberlake and Mila Kunis?
Well, the really interesting thing about the Can Sex Friends Be Best Friends movies, there were two of them that came out this year. The earlier one was No Strings Attached. The really interesting thing about those movies is that they always ask the same question, you know, can you play tennis? Can you have sex and not get emotionally involved? And they always give us exactly the same answer, which is no, because you always fall in love with the person.
Every time you have sex with somebody in one of these movies, romance must inevitably follow.
Well, not necessarily, but every time you arrange to, every time you promise not to get involved, every time you have one of these friends with benefits arrangements, it inevitably goes awry in that you inevitably fall in love with the person because sex without love is not possible, Hollywood tells us.
So Hollywood tells us. It's interesting that these films, you say, have been locked into the same set of tropes ever since, Hollywood had some problems with Mae West, and after that, they've all become pretty much the same.
Well, it's interesting. In the 1970s, Woody Allen comes along, and he bucks the trend a little bit, and you have some unhappy endings, or what we would view as unhappy, because the couple don't necessarily end up together. But in the last 10 to 15, maybe 20 years, the happy ending is pretty much standard and pretty much guaranteed. It doesn't matter how incompatible the couple is. It doesn't matter if they spend the entire movie deceiving each other, lying to each other about, you know, their very identities. By the end of the movie, there will be a chase, probably through an airport, sometimes over the Brooklyn Bridge. They will always end up together.
Interesting, because Woody Allen is the auteur behind one of this year's summer rom-coms.
That's right. And this one has a happy ending as well. It involves time travel. And sometimes you have to travel through time to get a happy ending, I guess, is the lesson of that one.
Well, except that the woman he's chasing the whole movie, the Woody Allen character, in this case played by a much younger man, which is a necessity these days. But the,
yes.
The Woody Allen character, the woman he's chasing through the whole movie goes back to La Belle Époque in Paris in the 1890s. And he's left with the clerk.
That's true, but she loves Cole Porter, and anyone who loves Cole Porter, well, you're pretty much set up for a good life with them.
We're talking with Chloe Angel, who wrote the article, What I Learned from a Summer of Romantic Comedies in the Atlantic, an editor at Feministing.com about what we can learn from romantic comedies, especially this summer's crop. She's taken out the time to suffer through all of them. Give us a call at 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org, and let's start with Jason, and Jason's on the line from Oklahoma City.
Hello, yes. This year I saw one of my favorites is Crazy Stupid Love, starring Steve Carell and Julian Moore. And me and my wife, we've been watching these romantic comedies, and that was particularly one that we enjoyed the most. I think it just really, it's realistic sort of from today's perspective. It rekindles hope in love. I think for a lot of movies prior to that in the 80s and 90s that, you know, love is a happenstance and, you know, you just either get lucky in it, but, you know, you have to, I think this movie, it talks about fighting for the people that you love, and it just made me think about me and my wife's relationship and how it grew, and how romance still needs to play a part of it in this day after being married for 7 years, seven wonderful years, and we still have to have that romantic fervor that that drive that they showed in that movie. That's needed.
Here's a scene from Crazy Stupid Love where Steve Carell attempts to give his son some advice about women during a game of catch.
There's a girl.
Girl, huh? You like her?
I like Pringles. I mean, this girl, she's incredible. She's my soulmate, you know? She doesn't even care.
But she's your soulmate, right?
Yeah.
Well, you just don't give up on her, right?
Why not? You did.
Well, Chloe Angel, as soon as we hear that line, we have to know that Steve Carell is going to change his ways and go back and find the woman that he loves, persist. And indeed, this, I don't mean to give anything away if you haven't seen the movie, but they get together at the end.
Well, I think, so what's really interesting about that scene is that it sounds adorable and really inspiring until you remember that the boy in question is 13. And the girl that he's lusting after is 17, and at the end of the movie, she gives him photos of herself naked, which I think counts as distributing child pornography and is really inappropriate to do to a person who is 13 years old. So there's that. Not a recommended flirtation technique among teenagers. And the other thing is that, so one of the criticisms that that Friends with Benefits actually makes of romantic comedies is that they never show you what happens after the end, after the, you know, after the grand gesture works and they get together, you never see what happens after that. And the caller is absolutely right that Crazy Sexy Love reminds you that you actually have to work to make relationships work, especially when you've been married for a long time, like Steve Carell and Julianne Moore's character have been. But this whole grand gesture thing, this whole, you know, fighting really hard for the people you love thing, again, it sounds really great when Steve Carell says it, but the way that it plays out in this movie is the 13-year-old attempts a romantic comedy-style grand gesture, and he completely humiliates the girl that he loves. You know, he embarrasses her in front of her peers, and she's mortified and tells him in no uncertain terms for probably the fourth time to back off. So one of the things that rom-coms teach us is that this persistence, this grand gesture of fighting for the people that you love, it's okay if you humiliate them, it's okay if you know what in the real world we might term stalk them, as long as you love them, because then it's romantic. And I think that's a harmful message, and that's something that we need to sort of view a little more critically.
Jason,
I agree a lot. I think as people get older, they don't do the grand gestures anymore as far as older in their marriage. And, yeah, it is embarrassing, but you find that it's an embarrassing way of affection. You know, sometimes when you do this thing, especially when you're young. When I was young, I did all type of things. I gave girls I didn't know cards and just, you know, grand gestures on the top of the stairs in school. But to me, I look back at it as like I took a chance and it was beneficial to me. It helped me grow. But when I got older, I didn't do those things. And me and my wife, you know, are redeveloping those grand things. And I do appreciate this time you guys let me have on the phone. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Jason. Have a great weekend. Let's see if we go next to this is Carrie. Carrie on the line from Jacksonville.
Yes. Hi there, Jacksonville.
Go ahead.
The thing about rom-coms to me is, A, they're almost universally panned by critics, even though they're popular, and you know, they just keep churning them out. And then when I read what the critics have written, and the critics are usually men, the famous ones, all the things that they dislike about the movie were the very things that I liked, or that where they might have been kind of silly, or they might have been light or farcical or whatever. But the men didn't like it, and they're popular movies, but they're being dissed. So that's the part that I don't get.
Chloe Angel?
That's because they're made for women. They're girly, and that's mostly why people dislike them. I mean, I think there is this sense around rom-coms that we're supposed to be ashamed of enjoying them, because they're girly and because they're made for women. And you're right, they are commercially hugely successful because people enjoy them. But I think because of their association with...
It's very easy to rag on them. And I don't think the genre is totally without merit. And I think some of the disdain that people express.
Oh, I see. We're having a little technical difficulty with the Skype line to Australia with Chloe Angel. We'll see if we get that straightened out. Though, Carrie, it's probably fair to say that those other types of Hollywood escapist movies that came out this summer, the superhero blow-em-ups, the critics didn't like those either. They made money, too, and they're made for boys.
They are made for boys, but I think that because their ratings are so very high, or their numbers are so very high, their dollar amounts are so very high, it's like the men shoot 'em up, boys like 'em, girls go to 'em. Because, I mean, I know a lot of my girlfriends like the shoot 'em ups too. I'm not into violence, so I don't really go to them. But it's just kind of like, okay, it's okay for these to be male, female, very popular. You know, they get dissed for different reasons. I think that the special effects weren't good enough, or the storyline was just kind of lame, but the special effects were still the key, and they weren't good enough. And the rom-coms, it was just so, repartee between the two wasn't. It just seems like a kind of a real minimization of the female approach to life in general, because rom-coms are just kind of chick flicks.
All right, Carrie.
I guess I don't learn anything except that in a way it's kind of sexism in the movies.
Chloe Angel, I don't think you're going to disagree with that.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I think you're absolutely right.
Carrie, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're talking about the rom-coms of this season and what we might learn from them, lessons from romantic comedies. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from BR. The only thing these movies teach us, especially women, yes, I am a woman, is how to have unrealistic expectations. The love the characters feel for each other is based on something that in real life would not be sustainable. And I think she's also got a point there.
I think she's absolutely right. And I think that is not unconnected to the fact that the genre is fundamentally a conservative one. It's all about getting people partnered up into long-term heterosexual monogamous relationships as quickly as possible, even if, like I said earlier, they are deeply incompatible. I'm thinking particularly of movies starring Gerard Butler, where he usually plays this boorish, macho, misogynistic pig, and women who he's paired with spend the movie hating him, and yet inevitably by the end of 90 minutes, you know, can't live without him. And I think that's an unsustainable model for romance as well.
Even as you point out in the film, Crazy Stupid Love, the confirmed bachelor and pickup artist Ryan Gosling, in about 2 weeks after meeting the girl of his dreams, the game changer, as he calls her, well, there you go. It's a monogamous relationship.
Right. And that storyline I found particularly disturbing. The Ryan Gosling fever that's going around at the moment is not without reason. But that storyline I found particularly disturbing because the point of that love story is basically that he's finally found a woman who is too good to objectify and too good to manipulate. But all the other women who came before her are totally worthy of being manipulated and objectified. And suddenly this one woman, Emma Stone, comes along who has qualities that sort of exempt her from that kind of sexist treatment and manages to melt his, misogynistic heart of stone.
Let's go next to, this is Jordan. Jordan with us from Charlotte.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just thinking that, when I was younger, I used to watch movies like Harry Met Sally was one of my favorites, and it really ironically wound up paralleling the relationship that I'm in now. And it's interesting that we went from a movie like that where, I don't think there was any pretense as to how the relationship played out. And now I think that with my generation in particular, there's an almost fear of commitment that leads us to believe that this whole friends with benefits thing can work out, when really it's kind of silly because either you can wind up together or you're not. It's the same thing. It's dating. We just don't like to call it that.
The difference between, I think When Harry Met Sally, Chloe Angel, was an important rom-com because it introduced the quality of the writing and the repartee was, I think, a step ahead.
I think it was a step ahead, and well, it was a step forward in quality, but it's actually a step back to the level of banter that you have in something like His Girl Friday. And the interesting thing about the role of banter in early movies like that is that it was a replacement for sex. You know, because of the Hays Code, they couldn't show physical friction and physical tension. So they, you know, they replaced it with really, really good wordplay. And you're absolutely right. When Harry Met Sally brings that back, and the banter is really good, and the, you know, the quality of the dialogue is quite good. And that is something that has almost completely disappeared from romantic comedies in the last. The romantic comedies that I grew up with, you know, in the past 10 to 15 years, is that the banter is totally gone. And that's something that Friends with Benefits brings back. That, you know, the dialogue and the banter in Friends with Benefits is really quite good. The messaging might not be, but the dialogue, at least, is highly entertaining.
Jordan, thanks very much for the call. I'd like to end with your last lesson learned from the seven lessons of the summer rom-coms, that Patricia Clarkson is the coolest mom in Hollywood and possibly the world. After last year's Easy A, you wrote, I had my suspicions. Clarkson's performance as Mila Kunis's ex-hippie, groupie, party animal mother left me fairly certain, and her turn as Jim Sturgess's loving but brutally honest mom in One Day confirms it. Patricia Clarkson is cooler than any other movie mother in recent memory, and she's sure as hell cooler than your real-life mom. Hey, whatever happened to Terry Garr?
No, you're absolutely right, but I have still filed the necessary paperwork and informed my own mother that I'm petitioning to be adopted by Patricia Clarkson.
Well, good luck with that. Thank you again very much for your time and for getting up so early there in Sydney.
Thanks so much for having me.
Chloe Angel is an editor at Feministing.com. Her piece, What I Learned from a Summer of Romantic Comedies, appeared on TheAtlantic.com. There's a link to it at our website. Go to NPR.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Tomorrow, Talk of the Nation Science Friday, Ira Flatow will be here with a talk about the author of The Big Roads, a history of America's superhighway system and the engineers that made it happen. We'll be back on Monday. Talk to you then. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.